You, as I said earlier, the most controversial part of your book, I think, is probably where the Kennedy assassination comes up. And I think you became interested in this. You kind of focused on it when you heard that George Herbert Walker Bush was asked where he was when Kennedy was shot. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had already become interested in him. As we discussed, I was tracing back his what looked to be a secret past in intelligence work long before he was CIA director, realized there was a lot to learn about his life. I started working back through the years and then ran across this in another book where it said that he couldn't remember where he was. He was on a show. It was asked, where were you when Kennedy was shot? What do you remember about that? He kind of sort of froze, said he couldn't remember. And of course, this always gets people in a lather because anybody over the age of five at that time can pretty much remember where
Absolutely.
They were when they heard.
Yeah, there's no question about it. So what did you find out?
Yeah, well, I spent years digging into this, and the result was five chapters in Family of Secrets on the Kennedy assassination and the Bush aspect of it. First of all, he was in Dallas, and he was there ostensibly for some other reason, but the very fact that he didn't just say, hey, I was in Dallas coincidentally at this event, you know, he didn't want that known. Why he was in Dallas is open to interpretation. The event that supposedly took him there was something that seemed to me contrived. And then we don't know where he was at the time of the shooting, although he shows up about an hour later near Dallas in another town, where he then makes a call to the FBI. We have the document is reproduced in Family of Secrets. He makes a call to the FBI, says this is private citizen George Bush calling with a tip on who may have shot the president. And that takes us to a whole other story, which we probably won't go into here. But I think the point is, this is a man who was in Dallas at the time and who actually had the unusual experience of calling the FBI to say he might know who shot the president, which I think most of us didn't do, didn't say we knew who shot the president.
Yeah.
And actually what the information he provided was erroneous. And so that's all very, very odd. But then as I began digging, I discovered even more odd things. One of these scores of oddities is that George H.W. Bush was a lifelong friend of a man named George Demorinschild, a white Russian emigre with murky intelligence connections, who himself was essentially a kind of a mentor, if you will, to Lee Harvey Oswald.
Well, I would say that's odd. There's also, I mean, one of the things about your book is that it's filled with a lot of footnotes and documents. And one of the things, there was a memorandum from J. Edgar Hoover that was dated November 29th, 1963. The subject heading was Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. And he reported on the day after JFK's murder, the Bureau had provided two individuals with briefings. One was Captain William Edwards of the Defense Intelligence Agency. The other, Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency. Is that our George Bush?
Well, this is quite interesting because that document first emerged in 1988 as Vice President George Bush was running for President of the United States. Very bad timing for him. And he was asked about it, and his office said that that was not him. CIA wouldn't comment, and that's normal. They won't talk about who works for them or who has. But then under pressure from the Vice President's office, they finally came forward and said, no, it's not him. It's another George Bush. They said it was a George William Bush, but they didn't know what happened to him. This reporter, doing quite a good job, managed to locate George William Bush, who told the strange story of how he had been recruited from another government agency in 1963, bafflingly asked to work at the CIA in some very low-level sort of trainee position, that he was there at the time, but that he was not the person referred to in this J. Edgar Hoover memo. And the conclusion that one can arrive at is that poor George William Bush was brought in because they needed to have another guy with that name at that particular moment. And then, by the way, they got rid of him shortly afterwards.
Mm. So what was Kennedy's relationship to the CIA at this time?
It was bad. It was very, very bad. Kennedy was wary of much of the establishment when he came into office. He was very wary of the CIA, was wary of Alan Dulles, the longtime head of the CIA. And then came the Bay of Pigs, in which he felt, I think correctly, that they were trying to corner him into committing American troops, knowing that the invasion itself was going to fail. He was not the one who the plan had not been created on his watch. It had been created on Eisenhower Nixon's watch, and he was basically pressured to let it go ahead. He was very, very reticent. He said, well, then these are Cubans invading their own country. We're not going to get involved. And it ended up that they had always planned to try to pressure Kennedy to get U.S. Forces and air power involved in supporting that invasion. He wasn't about to do that because that was madness. And mm-hmm. so he then decided that Dulles had sandbagged him, and so he let Dulles know that he wasn't going to let him stay. And by the end of 1961, Alan Dulles was out nursing a grudge for the next couple of years. And that work for Family of Secrets and work that I've been doing since shows very, very clearly that Alan Dulles and a coterie of people around him, including his good friend, Senator Prescott Bush, the father of George H.W. Bush, they all were furious with John Kennedy and with Robert Kennedy, and not just for this, but for a host of different reasons, as were major people in the oil industry, in banking, in the steel industry, in the sugar industry, on and on, all of these people very much wanting to see John F. Kennedy go away.
And Dulles, though, even though he was removed as the director, he was still pulling strings, right?
Oh, you know, we are learning more and more about that. I hope you've seen in the past couple of weeks, we've been running excerpts of a new book about Dulles. And
is that Talbot's
Dulles
book? David Talbot?
And
he's
right,
on tomorrow.
Yeah, great. And say hi to him for me. And, you know, the thing is that you know, Dulles was apparently, we are told, that he was, this is a man who was retired, but the weekend after Kennedy was shot, he's at the farm at this secret CIA installation, I guess apparently running the whole show.
Mm. Russ, let's bring a caller on here. This is Tim calling from Livermore. Tim, hi. Welcome to KGO. You're on with Russ Baker. Go ahead.
Thank you, Pat. Mr. Baker, I was wondering, before Lee Harvey Oswald was killed, he was in a hallway with a police officer on each side of him, and a reporter came up and said, is this the gentleman that killed the president? And Lee Harvey Oswald's head just spun around like he was really surprised. He said, I didn't kill no president. Do you think that Lee Harvey Oswald had anything to do with this at all?
I have been looking into that now for quite a number of years. I continue to do it. I hope there will be a new book to explore this. And I'm going to say at this point that everything I have looked at suggests that he had nothing to do with it.
No kidding? Nothing to do with it?
No.
He was just a patsy.
Yeah, and that's what he said. And you got to remember this. Usually when people do a major act of that sort, they do it because they're looking to get credit for it. And it's not normal that you would do something like that and then say, I didn't do it. If you were looking, if you were operating on your own and you were seeking, you know, they say he was an insecure guy who wanted the world's recognition, but then you would take the recognition. You wouldn't say, I didn't do it. And so this is very, very odd. Those who have researched this, and I count David among those, the more we've looked at Oswald, the more we see a fellow who was a great patriot and who actually, we know he was in the Marines. We know he did a number of other things. He was in the Civil Air Patrol as a young person. All of the indications are that, that throughout his very short life, he was 24 when he was shot by Jack Ruby, that he was in the service of his country throughout, that like George H.W. Bush, he was covertly working for the United States government. Now, how he ended up in that building is a very interesting story, and how he ended up accused of this crime, because in fact nobody saw him shoot the president. There are real questions. I don't know how much folks know about this, but I mean, the original weapon was identified as a Mauser, not as the Mannlicher Carcano. Later on, there were no fingerprints on the Mannlicher Carcano. Oswald was tested and found to have no residues. You cannot put a rifle like that up against your head and not have any residues. They know how to test for that. You know, you can't just wash it right off and nothing. And they, you know, the cover up that we've seen was so extensive. This is documented. The mortician who handled Oswald's body, the FBI agents came in with the gun and put it in his hands. And then they said, now we have his fingerprints.
Holy, I didn't know that.
This is documented. This is documented in an interview with the mortician.
Wow. And you know, one of the things that you informed me of that I had never heard of was the Umbrella Man. Can you tell us about, you know, some people who are listening who may not know?
We could go for 10 hours here, you know.
I know, we don't have that much time, but that's one of my favorites.
I'll tell that one quickly. We should also talk about how George H.W. Bush was having getting together that week with the man who was the head of CIA efforts to overthrow government leaders, you know, while he was supposedly a private oil man.
Right.
But anyway, okay. So Umbrella Man, Kennedy's car goes by. It's a sunny day, and there's a man standing there with an umbrella, and suddenly, just as Kennedy gets into the kill zone, this man begins pumping this umbrella, and the shots ring out.
It's an open umbrella.
He's pumping it up and down. Yeah, exactly. And you know, anybody with any degree of objectivity looking at that says, well, this is rather odd.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this guy could have been signaling. And by the way, we now know that not only was this man pumping that at the exact instance that these shots were raining down into the motorcade, we also know that there were chalk marks. You know about this? There were chalk marks found on the street demarking the area in which the car was when the shots rang out, and those chalk marks were there beforehand.
Holy mackerel. Hey, so Russ, what, there's only a couple minutes left here, but so George Herbert Walker Bush, it's bizarre that he claims he didn't know where he was. He was in Dallas, and then he was nearby Dallas and Tyler, I think, when he made that phone call to the FBI. What was he actually doing there, if you had to guess?
Well, I mean, the only thing I could figure out is that, you know, he obviously didn't want anyone to know that he was in Dallas. That's a fact, because of the fact he claimed publicly he didn't remember where he was. So why then, if he was in Dallas, he didn't want anyone to know that, and why would he make a phone call from Tyler? I concluded, this is this other town nearby, that his purpose for being in Tyler and making that phone call was to create, to establish that he was somewhere other than Dallas on that day.
Why?
Well, this gets into the fact that he was having lunch with Al Ulmer, the head of CIA coups that week, and that he was supposed to be an oil man, but he actually wasn't an oil man, and that Alan Dulles and Prescott Bush and all of these other people had it in for Kennedy, and that they, for a living, they removed and assassinated leaders. That's what all these people did.
And
they did it in...
They did it
with Mobutu, you know, in the Congo. They did it in Guatemala. They did it in Iran. They tried to do it in Indonesia. Al Ulmer was the head of that against Sukarno. They did this stuff everywhere. So the only question is, would the same people, and I'm including Mr. Bush in this, who were for this kind of thing, which most Americans, I think, would not presumably have been for, they were for this. This was normal way of doing business for them and for the companies whose interests they served. The only question is, what would they do when a man that they abhorred held power in the United States? Would
and
they let him do whatever he wanted
power,
to do or not?
Right, who threatened their power.
That's right. He threatened it very, very strongly. And I should point out, by the way, that the president's brother, unusually, Robert F. Kennedy, was the attorney general, and he was going after all of these interests.
And he's dead, too.
And he's dead, too.
By assassination. We're out of time.
Also by a so-called lone nut who doesn't remember doing it.
He forgot. So, Russ, we're totally out of time, but I think that this we've really just scratched the surface. I mean, I just cannot emphasize that we have barely scratched the surface in all the information, all of the things that are revealed in the book Family of Secrets by Russ Baker. Please get this book. You will not be disappointed. And then go see the movie Truth. Or if you have to see the movie first because you're a slow reader, do that. But I think that you will be pleased that you did so. Russ, just delightful to talk with you again. And thank you for spending the time with us this evening.
Well, thank you for taking an interest, Pat.
I'm always interested, Russ. WhoWhatWhy.org is the website. I'm Pat Thurston. Stay tuned. John Batchelor is coming up next. You're listening to KGO.